Chapter 7. Corporal Frank Cooper and his platoon made the move from the northern outskirts of Manila to the Bataan Peninsula in the west, just before the invading Japanese swept through and entered the city. In order to keep the city from being ravaged, General MacArthur had declared Manila an open city and evacuated U.S. and Filipino military units. They'd moved along narrow dirt roads, choked with refugees and other soldiers. Instead of an orderly retreat, it felt more like an every-man-for-himself scenario. Lieutenant Blunt did his best to keep the platoon together, but every time Japanese bombers or fighters appeared and dropped bombs or made strafing runs, the men scattered. It took time to get them all back together and assess who'd made it through unscathed and who hadn't. By the fifth or sixth time, if you were uninjured, you rejoined the exodus, or you didn't. By the time they finally arrived at their assigned bivouac area, a quarter of the platoon had gone missing. Over the next few days, more and more soldiers filtered in, but they were still far from full strength. Cooper kept the men in his team close. He'd lost one man on the journey. The soldier had taken cover during a bombing raid, and when they called the all clear, he simply didn't rejoin them. The thick jungle didn't allow for a thorough search, so he assumed Private Gunther had been killed or severely wounded. He felt awful leaving, but there'd be more attacks, and they had to get to the peninsula. Cooper had learned that being wounded out here was the same as a death sentence. They had left most of their medical supplies in Manila, along with most of the medical staff and surgeons. He wondered what the Japanese would do to them, particularly the nurses. Stories of Japanese atrocities had run rampant through the lines like wildfire. He knew that most had to be exaggerations, but the Japanese didn't have a good reputation in China. He'd seen grisly photos that made his stomach turn. After checking on his men, he sat on the top of a hastily fortified machine gun position. He reported to Sergeant Williams, the squad leader. "I've got them all tucked into their holes, Sergeant."
"Good. Remind them to go easy on the chow."
"We're already on half rations," he complained. Williams normally had a calm demeanor, but he barked,
"I know that, Frank. Remind him anyway."
"Will do." Williams rubbed the back of his grimy neck. He looked as exhausted as everyone else did.
"Sorry, Frank. We're in a shitty situation here. Half our food got left, along with half our ammo. If we don't get resupplied soon, we'll have to eat whatever we can find and throw sticks at the damn nips."
"That bad?"
"Yeah. I heard Sergeant Gunnison and Blunt talking about it. We've only got enough food for a week or two. Ammunition's a little better, but not by much."
"Well, the Navy's going to break through and resupply us any day now, from what I hear."
"I wouldn't hold your breath, Corporal. Just tell the men to go easy and to scrounge whatever they can find. I expect rations to be cut again soon."
Cooper rubbed his empty belly and thought about the meals his mother used to prepare for him and his brother back in Seattle. He asked, "Any mail getting out?" Williams gave him a look, and Cooper added, "It must kill my parents not knowing if I'm dead or alive."
"No. Telegrams and stuff like that, but no mail unless they sneak it out on a submarine or something. But that's reserved for more important stuff."
He checked his wristwatch and said,
"Rouse the men in an hour and get them filling sandbags and digging more foxholes and trenches. Once the Nips find our new positions, they'll rain holy hell down on us again."
"Will do, Sergeant." He ambled away, wondering how in the hell he'd gotten into this mess.
"Wow, I've never been anywhere like this before," Private Sean Cooper exclaimed.
"Me neither," agreed Private John Maxwell.
Both young men had recently graduated from airborne training at Fort Benning, Georgia, having completed the required 5 parachute jumps. They proudly wore their airborne patches, a silver parachute with an infantry blue background on their sleeves and hats. They both belonged to A Company of the 504th Parachute Battalion and couldn't be prouder. Soon after graduating, they took a 500-mile train ride from Fort Benning to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Soon after arriving in Fort Bragg, they boarded a troop ship and headed south to the Panama Canal Zone, which now shone like a beacon off the starboard side of the ship. "What do you suppose we're doing here?" Sean wondered. "The war's that way." He waved indiscriminately to the east.
More training, I guess.
Sean leaned on the rail. Airborne soldiers jostled him as they strained to see the exotic sights. Sean said, I wonder why C Company guys didn't come along.
I heard it was because a bunch of them came down with the clap, and the entire company had to get tested.
Sean looked amused but unconvinced. He couldn't contain his laughter as he imagined the men moaning as they cupped their burning members.
That's a bunch of horse shit.
Maxwell said,
I wouldn't put it past them. They were always a bit wild.
Sean pointed at women wearing thin dresses walking along the pier.
Wow, look at those dames.
Maxwell put his arm around him and mimicked wringing a chicken's neck. They're off limits. Don't you remember the movie about the local women? If you want the clap or something worse, there you go.
Nah, those are just the prostitutes. I'm sure the local gals are clean.
You suddenly an expert, Cooper?
Bellowed Corporal Maddox, his team leader. A few other paratroopers laughed, but most ignored him. Maddox had a few years on the young privates and liked to act as the experienced one on the team. He'd even boasted that he'd been a part of the test platoon, the intrepid soldiers who'd pioneered this whole paratrooper thing for the U.S. Army and became legends in the process. But the battalion had a few actual members, and they put Maddox in his place quickly. Maxwell teased,
You gonna teach us how, Corporal? You gonna hold our hands?
That got a much bigger laugh, and Maddox's jaw rippled as he ground his teeth.
I won't have time to teach any of you children anything. I'll be up to my elbows in the ladies as soon as we're settled.
Maxwell turned to face him and shifted the toothpick he always seemed to have in his mouth to the other side.
Care to make it interesting? What do you have in mind, Private?
$5, says Cooper Amigas, laid before you do. And it can't be a hooker, he quickly added.
Maddox guffawed, but extended his beefy hand.
You're on!
A few other paratroopers threw in their money, mostly betting on the privates, which made Maddox even angrier. Sean Cooper watched another U.S. Navy warship pass through the Panama Canal from the balcony of his simple barracks. The paratroopers had only been there a week, and none of them seemed happy about it. He crushed the butt of his cigarette into a can already brimming. Sailors scrambled around the ship's deck, and he saw some leaning on rails around the superstructure. He pointed at the passing destroyer. Those boys are heading straight into it, I'll bet. John Maxwell leaned back in the metal chair and asked,
You wish you would have joined the Navy?
Hell no. I just wish we weren't stuck here guarding something that doesn't need guarding.
PFC Lassiter Moore pointed at the ship.
Of course it needs to be guarded. That ship passing by here is proof enough of that. If the Japs or Nazis shut this down, our ships would have to go all the way around the tip of Argentina.
Sean said, First warship I've seen since we arrived. Most of it's just supply ships from other countries.
What I should have said is this place doesn't need airborne troops guarding it. Any straight-legged GI could hold this place just fine. Hell, even the Coast Guard could do it. We should be dropping into Africa or France with silk over our heads.
Maybe you're right, added Maxwell. Maybe we are just window dressing. Sergeant Mayhew entered the barracks and joined the men on the porch.
What are you pissants doing out here? Flashing the Navy?
Moore piped up.
Cooper thinks he should have joined the Navy, Sergeant. Think those boys will face the enemy before we do.
What do you think? We gonna get in this war or what?
Mayhew looked positively disgusted.
The Navy? He sputtered. You want to suck cock all day long, Cooper?
The others snickered and Cooper quickly said,
I never said that. I never did. Hell no, Sergeant. Geronimo all the way.
Mayhew's face remained in a sneer, but he answered Moore's question.
We'll get in this war. I've no doubt about that. If they just meant for us to look pretty, they wouldn't have let any of you in, and they wouldn't be training us to be so damn good at killing.
How long are we going to be here then, Sergeant? Sean asked.
You're asking the wrong guy. Besides, you'll do what they goddamn tell you to do.
Yes, Sergeant!
They all bellowed simultaneously.
That's more like it. Now get off your asses. We're going on a little hike.
He strode toward the door, and just before leaving added,
Full packs!
Training in hot and muggy Georgia had acclimated them to the heat, but the long trip from the U.S. East Coast to Panama and the relative laziness over the past week had Sean worried about his physical fitness level. An hour later, they started marching. They wore heavy packs and moved along well-used trails, crisscrossing over mountain trails and back again. They finally took a break after 2 hours of rigorous work. Sean stripped off his pack and his M1 Garand rifle and slugged water from his canteen.
"Easy on the water," barked Sergeant Mayhew. "You've only got 2 canteens and there's no water between here and home."
Sean forced himself to stop chugging, but it took all his willpower. He turned to Moore and Maxwell, sitting nearby.
"I feel like a raw recruit. What the hell happened?"
Moore answered, "All that sitting around we did on the boat. We're out of shape."
"This is bullshit. Why'd we let ourselves slip so far?"
Maxwell said, "They're teaching us a lesson. Work out or lose your fitness and pay for it later." Far too quickly, the break ended, and they got back on their feet and continued their endless march. After crossing another 900-foot hill and descending the other side, they marched along a road. Sean barely noticed the transition from mountain trail to two-lane road. He hoped it led straight back to the barracks. They passed through a moderate-sized town. Local vendors selling colorful clothes and equally colorful fruits and vegetables swarmed out to meet the bedraggled soldiers. At first, the officers and NCOs tried to maintain order, but the vendors pushed and shoved until they waved their wares only inches from the paratroopers' faces. Captain Johnson, the A Company CO, finally gave in and ordered the men to take a break. They stacked their packs, and 3 unfortunate privates were tasked with guarding them while everyone else got to meet the locals. Pandemonium ensued as they pulled out the colorful Panamanian paper money they'd exchanged and started haggling and buying whatever got their fancy. Sean and Maxwell hadn't brought a lot of money with them, so they broke away from the chaos. They spotted a cantina. The smell of deep-fried food and the sight of iced drinks caught their eyes. They ducked into the tiny building, and the smells of spice and cooking meat filled their senses and made their mouths water. Maxwell stopped Sean. "We don't have time for this. If we're not back on time, they'll make us do the whole thing over again." A lightly accented female voice asked, "What whole thing?" They both turned and saw a young woman step from the shadows. Neither of them could speak. Sean's jaw dropped, and she reached out and gently pushed it shut for him.
"There, all fixed," she stated.
Her touch sent shivers through him despite the hot day. She looked from one to the other and finally asked, "Are you going to answer me?" Maxwell finally stammered,
The march. They'll make us do the whole march over again."
She took in their sweat-streaked uniforms and dirty faces. She pointed at the patch on Sean's sleeve and read the word along the bottom.
"Geronimo. Is that how you say it?"
Sean finally got control of his voice, but not all the way. He squeaked,
"Yes, ma'am."
He cleared his throat and tried again.
"I mean, yes, ma'am."
She smiled, and Sean decided she was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen. He pointed to the patch and explained,
"We're paratroopers, ma'am."
Her eyes hardened, and she scolded him.
"Ma'am? Isn't that how you Americans address old women?"
He looked confused, and she said,
"I'm only 26.
Sean's face turned red, but she didn't let him suffer too long.
"Being a paratrooper means you jump out of airplanes, correct?"
she asked.
"Yes, ma'am,"
he quickly corrected. "I mean, yes, miss." Sean felt his bravado coming back.
"We're elite soldiers."
Maxwell guffawed.
"That's corny as hell, Cooper."
Embarrassment flooded Sean, and he had a sudden urge to punch his friend in the stomach to keep him from talking. But instead, he glared at him, and Maxwell clammed up. She extended her hand to him and smiled.
"My name's Ilsa."
Sean took her hand, and it felt delicate and warm. "Sean Cooper." He kept holding her hand and staring into her blue eyes. Maxwell stepped forward and extended his hand.
"And I'm John Maxwell."
Ilsa tried to disengage and shake his hand, but Sean held on. She finally laughed and said, "I'm going to need that back, soldier." As if she'd broken a spell, Sean released her hand quickly, like it burned. "Of course. I'm so sorry." Maxwell shook her hand. "Pleasure to meet you, miss." He looked behind her, seeing she'd come from the bar area. "Do you work here?" She pointed to an older man with a thick beard standing behind the bar, drying glasses with a white towel. "Carlos is the owner. I'm one of his suppliers." "Supplier? What kind of supplies?" Maxwell asked. "Alcohol, of course. German beer, mostly." Sean's demeanor changed a little. "German beer? You're German?" He asked it with a hint of disgust and disbelief. "Well, no. I'm Dutch." Both men looked confused, and she asked, "Is that a problem for you?" Sean exchanged glances with Maxwell. Sean tried to remember his geography from high school, but it hadn't been his best subject. No. If you were German, obviously yes, he stammered. Ilsa waved as though shooing away a fly. "The Panama Canal Zone is full of all kinds of people from many nationalities. Are you police officers, too?" Maxwell shook his head and said, "No, we're soldiers." Sean felt annoyed when Maxwell spoke, as though by doing so he took Ilsa's attention off of him. Sean asked, "How do you have access to German beer, then?" Ilsa crossed her arms and scowled. "That's a long story, and really none of your business." She leaned closer to Sean, and he caught a faint whiff of her perfume and her sweet breath. It made his head swoon. She said in a low, conspiratorial tone, "Mayor Gutsches really likes German beer." Maxwell stepped in front of Sean and pushed him toward the door. "We need to get back to our unit. Come on, Cooper." Cooper didn't take his eyes off her as he let Maxwell push him. Just before he backed his way outside, she waved and added a wink and a radiant smile. Once outside again, Maxwell turned him around and pushed him toward the road where the rest of the paratroopers were milling around. "That gal's nothing but trouble." Sean leered. "I'd love to get into trouble with her." Maxwell slapped him on the back of the head. "She's way out of our league. Way older, too. Are we at war with the Dutch?" Sean guffawed, but didn't know for sure. Then he remembered, "No, the Nazis invaded them, though. It's occupied territory." He gazed back toward the cantina, but she'd gone back inside. "Wonder how she ended up here." He didn't dwell on it, but said in a low voice, "She's the most beautiful woman I've ever met in person. Just stunning." "Keep your dick in your pants, Cooper. She's bad news any way you slice it." "What about our bet? You given up already?" "Hell no, but I know my fighting weight, and she's way out of yours or mine." Ilsa waited a few seconds before turning to the man behind the bar. "What do you think, Carlos?" In accented English, he answered, "I think that young man wants to fuck you." She glared at him. She hated how crass he could be. It had taken her a long time to get used to his foul mouth. "Well, of course he does. They all do. I mean, what do you think of the paratroopers being here? Will it help us or hurt us?" Carlos put the glasses beneath the bar as he considered his answer. "I doubt it'll have any effect. The Americans have been here for years. Their troops are easy to avoid, and their diplomats are easy to buy. It would be best to stay away from them." "He was kind of handsome, though." She leaned on the bar with her hands supporting her chin and exaggerated batting her eyelashes at him. "Don't you think so?" "Bah!" He waved her away. "You're teasing me. He wasn't even an officer. He'd be useless to our cause. You shouldn't have told him about the German beer. You made him suspicious. Dutch, huh?" He shrugged and said, "Doesn't really matter. He'll be shipped east or west and most likely be dead in 6 months." She spun around and looked at the empty tables.
Yes, such a shame. Still, it might be fun to play with him a little.
He spoke as though he hadn't heard her. When's the next shipment arrive? He asked.
If it makes it through the Wolf Pack and the Allies' zone, it'll arrive here in 3 weeks. We should hear from them soon.
It's getting harder all the time, he complained.
She glared at him, all the warmth fleeing her eyes.
Don't you dare back out of this now. We've come too far already. People's lives are depending on our success.
You're being dramatic, he scolded. Of course I'm not backing out. I'm just saying we may need to change our process a little. She lifted her chin and he continued.
The war is heating up. Our operation will become harder and harder to hide.
She pulled out a thin cigarette, lit it, then blew a large plume of smoke toward the slowly turning ceiling fan.
I disagree. The bigger things get, the easier it will be to slip our shipments past. The Allies are fighting on two fronts. They won't have time to worry about us.
I hope you're right.
She went to the door and poked her head out. She saw the paratroopers donning their packs and forming a line. They all looked the same, but she saw one of them looking her way and recognized young Sean Cooper. She waved and smiled. She could see his embarrassment and astonishment from here. She decided right there that she'd like to get to know him better. She needed a distraction from all this. It might make the time pass quicker. What harm could come of it?